Hello and welcome to the final off-season episode of the Three Bid League podcast. That's right, folks. By the time you're listening to this, opening games will either be a few hours away, or if you decided to wait, they might have already happened. But as always, I'm Tyler, joined by my co-host, Matt, and we are joined by a very special guest here today for our hot take segment, Kai McEwen of the Three Man Weave. Kai, thank you for joining us.
Hey guys, yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you are the architect of the A10 section of the Almanac. I don't think it's a stretch to say the foremost A10 expert in the national media landscape at this point.
High praise, I'll take it. Not sure it's accurate, but I will accept your praise. Thank you.
Well, certainly at least the king of A10 off-season content from that group. And if you haven't bothered to read Kai's work on the Almanac, you should do so. It is worth the money, even just for one conference, but you get some incredible college basketball content on there. So I'll give you the plug for that to kick things off here.
Yeah, really appreciate that. The Almanac is, you know, a labor of love. We Heat Check, Verbal Commits, Field of 68, and Three Man Weave, kind of a collaboration, massive, massive preview, 1,300 words in every team. We worked hard. We talked to every coach in the country. Big endeavor, but definitely worth it. And I think it's worth, you know, it's $20. I think it's worth the price of admission. I'm not sure there's a better preview out there of the entire landscape of college basketball.
And I do have to ask if you're willing to share, just because I think that's what sets the Almanac apart from other previews, is that you do meet with all of the coaches. And I apologize if you brought this up when you previewed the A10 a few weeks ago, but who was the most interesting coach in the league to talk to? Because it just seems like that would be a cool experience, really getting a deep dive of their teams.
So the most interesting guy is Frank Martin, because he's just like a character. and we don't really talk about the team most of the time. It's him like going off on tangents. Drew Valentine's a great guy. I'm pretty sure he's maybe even younger than I am. He's a young guy. So he's kind of just like talking to your buddy. You know, he's really casual with it and he's very open with the media. I'd probably single those two guys out, but really there's no bad coach to talk to. You know, Dunphy's pretty old. He's kind of like talking to your grandpa, but he's still a really nice guy and his players love him. So no bad coach in the league from a talking perspective.
Any good story about maybe a coach that you were afraid you were never going to get to talk to before this thing had to hit press? Because I'm sure out of the 300 plus, there had to be like five that just ran away.
Yeah, Ergo for Fordham was at the gun. Not for any reason he was ducking me, just like our schedules never lined up. And that was actually my last coach interview in the entire span of the Almanac, but he's a great guy. Otherwise, you know, Dunphy last year and Frank Martin, I was pretty intimidated to talk to, frankly, because I, you know, those guys are pretty big figures in college basketball and who am I? So it was nice getting to talk to them last year, having that experience for this season, felt a lot more comfortable with it.
Yeah. And for anyone who's never had the chance to meet Fran Dunphy and talk to him, he's actually a really, really kind guy. He is. Kind of starts going off on telling stories. He's the exact opposite level of intimidating that you would ever expect.
Yeah. And I heard his players, like he does push-ups and practice a lot and he'll really like get into practice, which you wouldn't expect just like looking at him from an outward perspective, but no, his players love him. That and their guards, Brantley and Brickus, I believe, didn't transfer. And I think that speaks volumes in this day and age.
Yeah. We'll see what LaSalle is able to do, but as I mentioned, everyone go check that out. You go fully in depth on every team and you give your A10 predictions as well. But one big picture thing that you do not address in there that I'd like to dive into, what are you expecting from the A10 as a whole this year? Coming off of, let's just be very honest, the worst season the conference has had in at least a decade and a half. I think three bids might be an aggressive hope for us, but is this at least a conference that's going to get some teams back into the at-large discussion this year?
Yeah, really weird, perfect storm last season with the A10. It seemed like every team was down, and that was probably a combination of bad injury luck, right? Dayton, you know, for instance, had horrible injury luck. Guys leaving, roster turnover, St. Bonaventure lost their entire lineup, basically. Some weird stuff. I don't know why SLU was bad last year, for instance. Don't know why Loyola was so horrible. But it was a strange season. I expect a bit of a bounce back this year. I agree with you. I'm not sure three bids is in the cards. It could happen, but not my expectation. I do think we see two bids. I think we get one at-large team there. It's going to be one of the top dogs, of course, and then an auto bid team. I think we get two again from the A10 this year.
Yeah, that would definitely be the hope. I mean, I can say from our perspective, just it's hard to stay invested for us doing an A10 podcast every week. Yeah. I mean, still fun storylines, but when it's like December 5th and it's like, oh man, it's already looking pretty grim. Hopefully, I mean, I think the biggest key has to be the non-conference for the league. And that's where a couple of my hot takes come into play. We're hoping we see a little bit more success there. But yeah, it kind of feels like the league has nowhere to go but up after last year's disaster.
Totally agree. Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully guys like Archie and Frank Martin kind of get their footing and start the upward trajectory, right? And hopefully the Lowell is better this year and down the line.
And that's kind of what I'm hoping to with the guys like Archie and Frank Martin. And I don't know if this is something that you've thought about with like other conferences or if you've seen it before, just as somebody covering college basketball as a whole, but I do think it means something that last year the A10 had six brand new coaches taking over programs, and that is a lot for 1 year for one conference. So hopefully with those established guys coming back, getting more of their own guys, see a little bit more wins and a little bit just happier vibes all around.
No, it's a really good point. I think being a first-year coach is really hard in this day and age with the transfer portal, with the way roster changes happen so quickly. So yeah, I kind of forgot there's six new coaches last year. It's a huge number. So yeah, again, one of those weird perfect storm things last season that kind of threw everything into one direction that was negative.
Yeah, so many veteran new coaches. I think that's why it's easy to forget. Like Archie Miller's been in our lives for so long at this point. Really, a lot of those coaches ended up struggling in year one, though. The one big exception being the aforementioned Keith Ergo. But before we get into our hot takes, I do just want to ask, because you put this all together weeks ago. You've probably regretted maybe a pick that you made. You've gotten some more information. If you could go back and tweak your projected standings right now, is there one team that you feel like you're either too high or too low on?
Yeah, I picked SLU 9, but I'd probably pick him lower today. And I'm a St. Louis guy. I'm from St. Louis. So I'm always kind of rooting for SLU in my head a little bit. But every time I kind of look back at them, and with the way their big guy situation is unfurling right now, with Bruce Zhang on the pine and Ezewiro not getting a waiver, it's getting pretty bleak. It's part of my hot take, I guess, so we can save that for later. But VCU, probably another team I moved down, was really high on them. And then Joe Bamisil gets his waiver denied, and Sean Bairstow is now out for 6 to 8 weeks, and they have basically nine scholarship players right now. So Ryan Odom has his work kind of cut out for him right now. I would definitely move the Bonnies ahead of VCU if I had to go back.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would probably share that same sentiment since the Bairstow injury as well. That was how the preseason poll worked out. VCU at 2, Bonnies at 3. I think on a redo, those would probably be flipped.
I'd agree. Yes.
All right. So let's get into everyone's favorite segment with a slight rebrand. It is no longer the Power 8 hot takes. It is now the Power 12 hot takes, because the A10 was not good enough last year to be deserving of that moniker. And yes, I know, people, they were technically 13th, but just like the win columns of these A10 teams, we don't pay attention to the NCAA tournament. So Princeton beating Missouri to bring the Ivy League up to 12 doesn't count in our minds. So
the BS game anyways.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I barely remember that game. I think I might have only seen the last minutes. But
no, I went to Mizzou. They crushed us. They dismantled us. It was a fair win.
Well, it was good enough to give the Ivy a better season than the A10, and let's all remember that as we head into this year and see where the conference can go. But Kai, as our guest, I believe you get the right to the first of our 12 hot takes. And I think the most interesting part of this is, do you want to come in super hot or give us one of your mild ones?
No, I feel almost bad that I feel like my takes aren't like boiling lava hot. They're just like, okay, kind of lukewarm, maybe teetering on hot. But we mentioned the how many bids the league gets. So I'm calling the shot. The Bonnies are going to win the league, and I think Dayton's going to get the at-large. So two-bid league is back. I love the Bonnies this year. Mark Schmidt, best coach in the A-10. They have the best home court advantage in the A-10. Don't sleep on Duquesne, but I think those are my two horses for the tournament this season.
Well, first reaction here, as a Dayton guy, I love to hear you say the Flyers get the at-large, because we all damn well know they're not winning the A-10 tournament. Hasn't happened in 20 years. But,
is that
no.
True? Wow.
Oh, yeah. And fun fact, the one time Dayton won the A-10 tournament in 2003, it was hosted at UD Arena. So,
wow.
Not very good history for the Flyers there.
Yeah.
Not in Brooklyn.
Are you offended by my best home court advantage for Bonnie's take? Because I think Dayton's right there.
Yeah, that part I'm not quite as happy about, but I do love the Bonnies this year. I mean, I think you already mentioned it, but just replacing the whole roster last year, they were kind of destined to have a rough season. And we've seen Schmidt have good success with rosters that have a lot of continuity in the past.
So I was going to go mild first and save my hottest take for the very end. But I guess for take number two, I got to pair it with this. I don't think St. Bonaventure is a title contender.
Ooh. Okay.
I think that this is a team that belongs more in the like Fordham, Loyola, and at least in my opinion, St. Joe's double by fighters. Could they finish fourth? I believe it, but I don't see the top level ceiling that everyone has raved about. Now, there are some caveats. I'm scared to death to bet against Mark Schmidt. And I'm incredibly terrified that either Chad Venning or, and I apologies to Jan Farrell, because I do not remember his new name off the top of my head. Essa Movis, I believe.
Oh, wow.
His, he formally changed his name and announced it yesterday. So
okay.
I'm very afraid that one of those two guys could become an absolute superstar. Not all conference. I think they're both pretty close to that right now. But
it's the first one, Venning Man.
Yeah, a potential number one, like first team all-conference guy. But I don't believe in this backcourt anywhere near to the level that most people do. Mike Adams-Woods is a huge pickup, because Kyra Luke just struggled mightily in conference play last year. His stats, if you take a look at the non-con versus conference play, his stats dropped pretty significantly. Over 3.5 points a game, around 10% in terms of shooting percentage, and dropped off about a half of an assist. He's probably more of a bench player at this point, but unless Mike Adams-Woods is, once again, some sort of all-conference level guy, I'm not sure average point guard play is enough to prop up a Bonnie's offense that couldn't make two-pointers besides Venning to save their life last year. And the biggest piece, I just don't think that Darryl Banks is the superstar that everyone makes him out to be. I'd throw him as a low second team, high third team all-conference guy right now. And it's impossible to deny the best games. The 36-point outburst against St. Joe's, the 29 against Fordham. We can never forget what he did to Kentucky in an NCAA tournament game. But I also cannot overlook the fact that he finished the year with single-digit points in his last two games, in five of his last 11. That's just who he is. He is an inconsistent guy. And moving up from the NEC, Charles Pride, another dude who's seen his stats fluctuate from year to year, I just don't think that Bonaventure has the pure scorers to properly complement Venning on the perimeter. Also, Chad Venning came in after being bad at a MEAC school as a freshman, and the dude is incredible already. Are we 100% sure he still has another notch to reach?
These are good, because Schmidt addressed like all of these questions in the summer. So number one, Venning, Schmidt was like, this dude was just out of shape. Yeah, like he couldn't play. He played a lot because it's Schmidt. He didn't play his bench. But he was like, the guy just could not stay on the floor because he was out of shape. He said he's in the best shape of his life. You know, coach speak, of course, but he says he has another gear in him. I tend to believe that. He said Luke, he put a lot of pressure on him early. He probably played him a little bit too much and rode him a little bit too much last season, kind of led to the inconsistencies. He definitely says there's more of a pecking order this season with Banks kind of taking a bigger role. I think I kind of differ on that. I do think Banks is pretty darn good. And now, should he be playing 40 minutes a game? Nobody probably should on the Bonnies, but Again, Schmidty's going to do it. But I respect the takes, though, Tyler. I like the hotness of the takes. I accept your spiciness. Curious, though. So who's your top three if the Bonnies aren't in it?
I wanted to go really hot with that. It's just me sliding Duquesne up into
okay.
that slot.
So Duquesne, VCU, and Dayton?
Yeah.
Yep. Gotcha. Yeah, that's fine. That's good.
All right, Tyler, I know you've been holding on to that Bonnie's take for about 2 months.
That's
so.
Been marinating since like yeah. June.
That had to feel good to just get it all off your chest tonight. But for my first hot take, I'm just going to go general, like big picture of the league. And I think there's maybe three or four teams that could potentially do this, but I see someone in the A-10 going 16-2 this year. It's only happened twice in the conference's history since moving to 18 games. 2019 VCU went 16-2, and of course we know about 2020 Dayton. But I really just think it's going to be another year where the bottom of the conference struggles. I think we'll have at least four or five sub-200 ranked teams, and I'm not feeling that great about the bottom half of the middle of the pack. Like, Kai, you already mentioned St. Louis having some problems early
yeah.
in the season. I don't know what to think about Richmond. I think they're going to have better guards, but just those teams in the like 7, 8, 9, 10 range, not crazy about. And we almost saw it happen with VCU last year where they ran away and won the conference by three games, going 15-3. So I'll just take it one step further. I think whether it's Dayton, Bonaventure, maybe VCU when they get healthy when Bairstow comes back, I feel like any one of them could potentially just stand out from the rest of the pack.
I like this actually take. Believe that Dayton can get to 16-2, though.
No, but I had to throw them.
You don't think so? If they're all healthy, look, they're healthy, right, by the way? I need to confirm. From my betting perspectives, because they seem healthy based on the exhibitions, but I need insider info.
They've looked all right. I will say Kobe Brea is about... If you go back to Brooklyn last year, he's, I think, one for his last 30 on three-pointers. And he's, like, 1 for 12 to start this year in the two exhibitions. So he's okay. A big concern. Malachi Smith looks pretty good. I want to believe in Dayton. It's more just that I've been hurt a lot the last 2 years. And I think they're going to be right there at the end of the season. But, I mean, Holmes is definitely the best player in the conference. And he can carry them to a lot of wins.
He's awesome. I like your take because you can see the downside with every team. I think every team has a really low floor. Like even teams, I mean, St. Joe's, if you want me to go take two, I can do that right now. It's a good segue, I think.
Yeah, let's do it.
St. Joe's disappoints, finishing bottom half in the league. I don't trust Billy Lang. He can sell you on a vision. Kind of looks like a used car salesman. But the fact is he hasn't proven anything. On paper, this is arguably the most talented starting five in the conference. It's the best backcourt. And if you believe in the coaching staff's anointment of Esendoko as an all-conference level player, that's how they feel about him, then this team should be a top three team just based on roster alone. They've never finished above 500 in the A-10. And KenPom, big KenPom guy, 260, 202, 163, and 191 KenPom. It's pretty yikes. He'll say injuries is a big reason why, and he's not necessarily wrong, but I think it's a bit of a leap. Everyone's kind of crowning them, right? I picked them fifth, but everyone kind of expects them to be up there contending for a title this year, and I'm not so sure it happens.
So after I fought you on the last one, I'm going to follow up with, I can't believe that you don't believe in what is supposed to be the best offense in the A-10 after they finished seventh in that category last year. And by the way, have never been good on defense under this regime.
It's true. Again, man, if you listen to him talk, you would believe anything. Like, he is a really good motivator. He's a really good speaker. You would think he's like a really like big winning coach by the way he speaks, but it just hasn't been proven on the court. That backcourt's awesome, by the way. They should be really good. But to your point, seventh in the conference last year in offense makes very little sense to me.
I'll pick that up and go into my second hot take. It's kind of, I don't know. I could see St. Joe's finishing still upper middle of the pack. I don't think they're a contender like some people would lead you to believe. I think it's going to be an inconsistent team. We've just seen them take so many bad losses. But I will say, one of my predictions, I think they have a good chance to come away with maybe the biggest win of the non-conference. I'll say they get chances at Kentucky and at Villanova, both in November. I'm going to say they win one of those games and just shoot the lights out, because we know St. Joe's can do it with this personnel. The backcourt you mentioned, Reynolds and Greer, is going to be fantastic. I still don't see them as a contender because they're going to lose too many bad games, but I think just with the insane upside that the Hawks could have, if it all works out, they could get some really big wins and maybe be a team that you don't want to face in Brooklyn in March.
Totally agree. That's the ultimate St. Joe's, is they're going to win some awesome games. I agree, Villanova, that's a real potential win right there, but they're going to lose to like LaSalle in conference play, because that's just what they do. The high variance of St. Joe's. But yeah, I like it. I think they get a big win in non-con too. That's a good take.
Oh, they're definitely going to lose one of the games to LaSalle.
Yeah.
And honestly,
Dumpy's licking his chops.
The funniest thing that could happen is they face in the 3-4 game of the City Six Challenge, and LaSalle beats them in the middle of December in a non-con game.
Oh, are they doing that? Are they doing the do they play LaSalle in a non-con technically?
No, it's everyone plays two games in their little three-person group for Philly, and okay. It has been cleared up to me that it is possible for the two of them to play on the final day.
Gotcha. Okay.
If it lines up, they will let it happen. So.
Sure.
Didn't we recently have a season where LaSalle beat St. Joe's three times? Are they going to make it four this year?
Yeah, that was 2 years ago.
Yeah, I thought that happened recently.
Wow. Yeah, that's tough for Billy. I mean, just objectively more talented team there.
All right. So my next one that I was actually ready to go to is even more granular about St. Joe's. Cameron Brown, he of 100 career starts, he of preseason third team all A-10 accolades, is going to win an award this year, but it's going to be sixth man of the year. I think that Billy Lang figures out partway through the season that he can't just have all three of his offensive guards on the court together all game. He's going to have to start one of these athletic freshmen. My guess now would be Sean Simmons, but it could be Brown. It could be Finkley. One of these guys is going to enter the starting lineup to bring some more athleticism and defense to that perimeter group. And by the way, Lynn Greer is incredible. He is already better than Brown. I can't believe that Brown got picked over him on the preseason all-conference team. But if Cam Brown goes to the bench, he's going to run away with the six-man scoring title. And even though a guy like Andre Savrastov or maybe whichever Fordham senior comes off the bench and plays incredible defense, those guys might be deserving of the award. But if you score 12 to 15 points off the bench, we know that that makes you a lock to win it.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I don't know if Billy will bench him though. That's my, like, it'd be smart maybe to put a little more defense in the starting lineup. I just can't see him. I can't see him doing it. It just wouldn't be his MO.
That's why it's my hot take and not my prediction. Because I also don't trust Lang to actually do it.
Hot takes hot takes, man. Yeah.
He's a fifth-year senior. That would be quite a move from Billy Lang, but maybe that's what it'll take this year.
I feel those guys have some egos, too, if I'm not. I'm reading into it, but flashy backcourt guys usually have egos.
Yeah. All right, Kai, you want to give us your third pick?
All right, well, I kind of hinted at it. Slew tanks, bottom three. Front court's a huge problem. Hargrove's going to play the five in some lineups. He's 6'4". He's tough. He's really strong, stronger than everyone in this podcast, but he's still pretty small for the A-10. Yuri Collins is going to be a shock to the system. I think a huge downgrade at point guard, even with Mike Meadows coming in. And no offense, Travis Ford. I'm not really impressed with Travis Ford. You look at these SLU teams last several years, my God, they're talented. A lot of people had them comfortably at large teams last couple of seasons, and it just hasn't come to fruition. I believe he made the tournament from basically a lucky A-10 tournament run. And then last season, of course, was kind of a dud. So I think they tank. I know Ford's got a huge buyout. If they can stomach it, I would expect them to get fired. But I guess the buyout probably prevents that.
I had them 9 in early September. When Matt and I go through our predictions later, I will have them at 12. Never, ever run away from the season from hell when it starts flashing its ugly head. They were so thin up front anyway. It looked like they weren't going to get Edge Wiro. Now we find out that the German guy, whose name is currently escaping me, because I want to call him Martin Lindsen, even though it's not him anymore, but
Yeah.
he might not even be eligible because of some foreign transfer stuff. And then they lose Bruce Sang. Like, they might have to play Dolger at the five and Jimerson at the four on opening night. And well, I would actually like to see that in some games just for the fun 90 to 88 potential that it will give us of Jimerson raining threes on big men and then getting posted up to the bejesus on the other side. That's not going to win you ball games. And the basketball gods give you a warning sometimes. This is just like the Grizzlies in the NBA. That injury is kind of the last straw. And I think they're telling us this is going to be an ugly year for the Billikens.
Yeah, and remember where Dolger's from. It's Tulsa, and they were 5-26 last year. So it's not, he put up stats, but he's not exactly a team saver. And Bruce Sang, who's to say he's even good? Unranked freshman, he's 7-1, but is he ready to play in the A-10 even when he's healthy? I don't know. There's a lot of stuff on the wall. It's like Jimerson's great, but I'm not sure he's a team carrier, especially in this environment.
Yeah, well, that is certainly a hot take. Speaking of bad teams, I want to talk about Rhode Island next. And
Yeah.
you know what? I hate doing this. I did it last year, but I just can't quit on Archie. I'm going to say they're going to be surprisingly good. And I don't know how hot this is, but none of them got picked in the actual preseason awards. I'll say one of their transfers makes it on an all-conference team. So whether that's Jaden House contending for a scoring title, Courtright maybe being the steady hand at point guard that they missed last year, or the all-name team guy, Always Right, who put up some crazy numbers
Yeah.
in junior college. I just think Archie isn't going to completely whiff in the portal 2 years in a row. And just with so many teams that have questions in the bottom half of the league, I'm gonna trust that he's still a good coach and he'll figure something out with these guys.
I agree. I was in on them last year too. I really believed in him. Summer, he said, hinted chemistry was a mess last season. Obviously, what's his name? Got kicked off the
Oh,
team.
Brown
Freeman.
Freeman. Yep.
Freeman. Weston wasn't ready. Yeah, not, you know, he was a big recruit, but he hadn't played basketball in 2 years. There's a hint like now Archie really has his guys. And I think Courtright and House are gonna be really good. Montgomery's a really underrated get. He didn't put up big stats, but he's like a perfect glue guy from Bradley, a winning program, unlike Tulsa. So I agree. I think there's potential for Rhode Island.
Good. I'll go the other way on this one. Matt, I think you can be both right and wrong. Like, if Archie whiffed in the portal, they might go 0-18. If he hit a double, they still probably might finish like 12th or 13th. And that's what I think he did. I think he put together a decent class that'll keep them competitive. I picked them last because I honestly just don't hate any of these teams this year. And I kind of just had to throw somebody down there. But I just have a hard time finding enough talent for there to be like a true top three that you need to be competitive. Maybe you're right. Maybe Courtright finds his way onto third team all conference and is a good player. But unless like Brandon Weston starts to actually play offense, and I hope he does because I still really like him as just a crazy freak athlete. I don't know what this team's going to actually do well, like that they're what they're going to be above average at that can be their calling card to lead them, say, to like the top of the pillow fight or even out of it.
Theoretically defend. That's the theoretical, because Archie's a defensive coach and they do have some athleticism on the team, but not a guarantee, to your point.
All right, I guess I got my next one, which is that Malachi Smith will win the assist title en route to a first team all-conference spot. Now, this has to be double because him winning the assist title I thought would be hot. It's not even close. If he had been eligible last year, he would have lost by 4.5 assists because Yuri Collins was just that incredible. He averaged 5.6 a game, which was actually more than James Bishop's 5.2. I thought Bishop was at 6. That's where I got surprised. So he is the returning assist man in the conference, despite the fact that he didn't have good shooting around him last year, and his fellow backcourt really let him down at times. And he admitted it himself, never 100% healthy the entire season. I think a healthy Malachi Smith with good shooting around him, and honestly, a whole bunch of guys who are not going to really possess the ball. taking the ball out of Tamani Kamara's hands puts it more into the hands of Malachi Smith and Daron Holmes. It's the only good thing about him leaving is that Malachi's going to have a chance to really dominate. And I started going through trying to figure out my first team. Holmes, absolutely. Reynolds, yep. James Bishop, I think I might put him on second for my five-man unit, but he'll definitely make the six-man unit given his stats. Max Scholga on a good VCU team is their leader, and Day-Day Grant doing the same thing for Duquesne. That leaves one spot. I think that's the spot that most people are giving to Daryl Banks. I'm going to go ahead and give it to the second best player on the team that I think is going to win the title.
Yeah, wasn't he first team all-conference preseason 2 years ago? I think either I had him there first or second.
Yeah, he was up there, and then just the injuries never let him get off the ground. Tyler, you know what I'm going to say. I don't think Malachi Smith can lead the league in assists when Dayton insists on playing these 58 possession games.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they
be faster. Matt McCall insisted it.
Everyone says they're going to play fast. That not every team can do that, though. And I'm going to wait and see what Anthony Grant will do. But no, I mean, if Malachi Smith is healthy, that is the most important thing for Dayton, I would say.
I hope he is. I think I have one more. It's not hot at all, because most people agree. Loyola's back, top five. Too much talent, and I like Drew Valentine. So top five, Loyola. I can't believe they finished last year. I cannot believe it. They're back.
My last one is that Loyola was going to take St. Bonaventure's double bye spot.
Okay.
I think they're being severely underrated because everyone's just mad that they sucked last year. And it's just honestly, like, it's just a good joke to A10 Twitter that here's this team with all the flash and pizzazz. They walk into the conference and they were clearly the worst team in the league. Mm-hmm. I think they're actually way better this year than I thought a year ago. I thought it was ridiculous that they were fourth in last year's preseason poll. And I think you actually probably should flip them this time around. This is a proper Drew Valentine. God, I mixed up another set of brothers. This is a proper Drew Valentine Loyola team. They're going to be the most efficient offense in this conference. I'm not sure they have like the Lucas Williamson type stud defender anymore, but they're going to be a hell of a lot better on that end than they were last year.
Yeah, I don't know what happened last year. A weird dynamic. Kennedy was never good. Norris was strangely like inconsistent. A couple guys, I think Drew expected to be a lot better, were not. And I think this year he was like, screw it. I'm getting old guys I know can play. And that's what he did. He got Dolan Watson, the guy from Dartmouth. I think they're going to be really good. And unfortunately, KenPom ranks him third. So cat's out of the bag, and it's not really a hot take anymore. But A10 Twitter, I guess, would say these guys finished last. They're imposters. They're new to the league. I still think they're going to be really good.
The word of mouth, people feel like they're like a middle of the pack team. The computers love them. Torvik has them winning the regular season title outright.
Interesting. Yeah. Those models use past history, right, to do it, especially recent years. And right, besides last year, five straight years of just really, really good, seven straight years of really good teams. So that's probably driving a little bit. But yeah, they're really old. They're experienced, probably the most experienced team in the league, starting five. I buy it.
And the last thing I want to throw in on that, there's only like five teams that actually have good front courts this year. It's them with Adela Kuhn and Alston. And if Miles Rubin is good, and all of a sudden, I guess Welch is just like a bit player after he was one of their few bright spots last year. Dayton with Holmes, obviously. Duquesne with the 800 different big guys they got. Bonaventure with Venning and Nguyen Farrell. And I guess maybe VCU because they got some talented options there. Maybe St. Joe's, but that's about it. The rest of the front courts are pretty rough.
Yeah, I agree. I like Davidson. Davidson's front court a bit, but that's more of a hot take later, player take later. But Duquesne, you mentioned, talk about being slept on. I mean, no one, they're not a sexy program, let's be honest. Dan Brott's not a sexy guy, but this team could be really good. Duquesne, they could win the league for sure.
All right. My final hot take, we've already brought up the preseason KenPom rankings a little bit, and a team I'm very high on that I think got disrespected by some of the computers. I'll say Fordham is the one team in the A10 that cuts their preseason KenPom rating in half. So right now they're going in 163rd. I'm saying they're going to be a top 80 team. Right now they're ranked as the worst offense by far. And if that comes to fruition, I'm going to look like an idiot, but kind of just banking on Will Richardson's development, hoping that Jafet Madore can be the playmaker they desperately need and that Josh Rivera can replace some of Khalid Moore's production. I think if those things happen, I'm really confident the defense is still going to be one of the best, if not the strongest in the conference. And feel like that Keith Ergo could keep some of the momentum going from last year and get this team firmly into the double bye conversation.
Yeah, there's no way the worst offense. No way. And if you believe Ergo was really the architect behind 2 years ago and not Neptune, then absolutely, Fordham could be right up there again.
My issue with the KenPom ranking is that it has them fifth in defense. They bring back all their stud defenders except for Khalid Moore on what I honestly thought was the best defense in the league at the end of last season. I don't see how Antrell Charlton, Carl, I almost called him Carl Rose, Kyle Rose, Abdu Simbila, Will Richardson, and then just a bunch of random athletes is not going to lead to either the best or second best defense. I think it's them versus Dayton for that title in this whole league.
Yeah, they're all just really long wings, and they have like four or five sophomores, right? Players make the biggest jumps in year two. What if all those guys have those jumps? Will Richardson, you mentioned other coaches expect him to be the breakout player of the conference and be, you know, that guy. So it could definitely happen. Their upside is huge. Their ceiling is very, very high.
All right. That does it for the Power 12 hot takes. So we're going to move on to an interesting segment that we probably should have been doing for years. Basically, who do we want to buy stock in? And Kai, I presented this to you as find a guy who is not projected as like one of the three or four best players on their team that you are just all in on. Maybe that means this guy is a sneaky all conference pick. Maybe it's a young player who no one's expecting to start that's going to do so. Who should we be watching out for as a sleeper player?
Besides Fordham's sophomore class, of course. So not a top four guy on the team, I think is what you phrased it at in the message. So I picked out two. Number one is Sean Logan for Davidson. McKillop called him possibly the best shot blocker in school history last season when he's coming in as a freshman. I think he's just scratching the surface on how good he can be. So Reed Bailey gets the press clippings. He's fantastic. I think Sean Logan takes a big step this year. Maybe not a all conference player yet, but he can get there someday, be an all defense guy down the road. And then I can't pronounce his last name, but Toby Lawal from VCU, freak athlete. He's gonna get a ton of playing time since they're so thin. He's gonna be really fun to watch.
Yeah, and that's kind of
Yeah,
a popular one too. I know the VCU fans are getting really hyped up about him right now.
Just a freak athlete. I think that's very exciting to root for those guys, like Cohen Carr from Michigan State.
Also, a double shot blocker pick.
Yes. Defense.
That is a good pick. I mean, I think Lawal, out of the like incoming sophomores for VCU, probably got the most playing time out of that group, but they're all back. One of mine actually was going to be Christian Furman. Not crazy about the bigs that VCU brought in from the transfer portal. I mean, you talked about Dolger coming from Tulsa. Well, Roosevelt Wheeler and Kwani came from two teams that won a combined seven games. So
Yeah, tough.
Furman was a highly rated recruit. I think he's going to get some playing time, and just last year was buried on the depth chart. And then the other one you already just mentioned, Fordham's entire sophomore class as a whole, but wanted to pick out Angel Montas, who has been getting a ton of hype this offseason and believe he was limited to just two games last year, but think he could have a much bigger impact, of course, if he's healthy.
Yeah, Montas for sure. I agree.
So mine, the one with the asterisk, because I'm pretty sure that your starting point guard has to count as one of your top four guys. But if he doesn't, the Bulldog Kareem Rozier, who's going to be at the head of an improved Duquesne defense this year, is going to be a great facilitator for just a bunch of talented dudes who are going to need shots. He'll be the guy who brings it to them. But my main pick, he was honestly just pretty bad as a freshman, but I cannot quit Jalen Quinn. He is the one burst of athleticism on this old, deliberate, smart Loyola team. I think he ends up being their six-man spark plug this year. He's probably the best slasher that they have on this entire roster. Norris and Dolan aren't guys who excel at that. Neither is Schweiger. Dez Watson's a good cutter, but he's not a guy who gets you to the hoop with the ball in his hands. I just think he brings a completely different element than anyone else on this roster. And I don't want to call him the most talented perimeter scorer on this team. I think that title probably still belongs to Greg Dolan, but he certainly can make shots in more ways than anyone else the Ramblers have.
Yeah, he had a couple outbursts last year, scoring outbursts, so he's definitely got potential. I don't hate that pick either.
Yeah, he's got to clean up the turnovers, though. If that doesn't happen, then I'm going to look foolish.
Yeah, the whole team. They were among the worst teams in the country last year in turnovers, so that needs to change, obviously.
All right, Kai, any other thoughts that you have just rattling around your brain with the A-10 season around the corner?
Yeah, I was thinking of hot takes, and I was like, I'm pretty confident in these three, like, quick things. I'm confident UMass is bottom three in this conference. I'm confident GW overachieves, and I'm confident Fordham overachieves. Those are the three, going with Matt's Fordham thing there. I think Caputo, like Ergo, is a really good coach. He just has that it factor that he gets it. Comes in a good tree, Larinaga tree. And UMass, I don't know what Frank Martin's doing with his roster. I don't get it. He's going to play all his freshmen like 15 minutes a game because that's what he does. So I don't think it's going to be pretty.
Yeah, I kind of can't believe that people – I haven't seen too much of it, but I've seen a few people picking GW in like the bottom three, bottom four. I'll tell you Guilty. Three reasons why it's not going to happen. Caputo, Bishop, Edwards. As long as they have those three guys, they're at least somewhere on the better end of those, that back section.
Yeah, I got some flack for I picked them bottom three, but those three guys are fantastic. The coaching, especially Bishop, their record, they're 10-8 last year. We all know they weren't that good of a team. They just played well in conference. That's a credit to Caputo, though. So that's why I think I picked them 12th. They will finish higher than 12th, guarantee it. Had to pick someone there. Flip them with SLU if you want. That seems like a good compromise.
I think that actually would then match up those two with my projected standings. I have GW as the last team above the pillow fight.
Perfect. I accept.
All right, Kai. Well, thank you for joining us here today. Where can everyone find your great work?
Yeah, Twitter, 3manweave, 3MW underscore CBB. And if you want to check out the almanac, it's cbbalmanac.com.
Yeah, and everyone, if you're not listening to the 3manweave yet, gives you a great perspective on really the entire world of college basketball. A highly, highly recommended show from myself. And since none of this is on video, you can't see Matt nodding his head as well. We give four thumbs up to these guys, so be sure to go out and follow them. Thanks for joining us, Kai.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, another thanks to Kai for joining us. We're going to spend the back half of this episode talking about our power rankings and then our vaunted once a year over under segment to close it out. So be sure to stick around. I know this episode's going to be well past an hour by the time you get through it, but worth sticking around to the end. Matt, where do you want to start our power rankings discussions here? I feel like we kind of already talked about how we feel about the top.
I think you're right. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. One of these days, I mean, it's easy just when it's just the two of us. We need to get a well-esteemed guest and just open up the podcast. Who's the worst team in the league? I feel like we should just start there. That'd be kind of entertaining and get it out of the way early.
We should just ask that to all of our guests, but then just start the year with like a roadie fan or something.
Yeah, well, that's an easy answer for them. They'll just pick UMass. But no, we can start in the bottom and then work our way up toward the favorites. So I guess, should we just give the entire pillow fight, go a couple teams at a time? I never remember how we do this.
Yeah, so I guess let's start at that bottom group. I have kind of four distinct tiers, and my pretty sure they're pillow fighters group. Five teams in that, although the top one, I thought long and hard about bumping them into the group above. That is the LaSalle Explorers at 11. I think the take is that it's the worst roster in the league and that Fran Dunphy will drag it up. And I kind of said that myself. And the more I look at it, I just don't think that's true. I think that this is actually a little bit better of a team than everyone thinks. There's so many random wild cards that I feel like they didn't have last year, whether it's Marrero or Shepherd now coming back with some minutes under them. Can they get a big jump from one of those guys? Rokas Josias, a guy that I almost took in the last segment as someone that I'm buying stock in. He's ridiculously important because they basically have no depth behind him and they're going to be really small without him on the court. But the foreign freshmen they have coming in now, led by Fasasi, there's just so much more high-level variance in the front court than they had last year, where you knew that the Drames and Decore were never going to take you out of a game, but none of them ever had the potential to be more than just kind of a solid mid-rotation guy. And Brickus and Brantley is quietly, if not one of the best backcourts in the league, at least in the middle of the pack. And when you have two veteran guards who are both above average, I think Brantley's an all-conference guy. If I was predicting the full 18, I'd put him on third team here. Brickus is one of the best solid role players in the league, and you don't see teams with a combination of awesome veteran guards and a great coach be one of the worst teams in any conference. So I think LaSalle is actually even better than people believe. We talked about it in the last segment, St. Louis at 12. Like, Gibson Jimerson and the fact that he is just a better player than anyone on any of the three teams below, and the fact that, say what you want about Travis Ford, his teams never truly suck. I think that that's a combination there. And with all the veteran, all the random veterans they have, Meadows, Dolger, it keeps them afloat. It keeps them out of the basement. UMass at 13, I feel like I could have gone higher with them. Cross and Cohen's one of the better front court combos, but this team is so young. I still don't trust the Diggins and Thompson crew. I think they're pretty below average in the backcourt. Richmond, I talked about it on the team preview. I love what they got in the transfer portal if they had gotten all those guys last year. This team, any scoring that they generate is just thanks to the Mooney system and the fact that they got a bunch of good passers. But I have no idea who on this team is going to actually make a jump shot other than maybe Jordan King. The shooting's just, it's barren in that spot without Burton. They're going to miss Matt Grace bad. It really helped them having two front court playmakers last year. And then, as I talked about in the last segment, I kind of just slotted Rhode Island into 15th. I think they probably have the lowest ceiling in the conference. Even if Archie hit a home run with this group, I'm not sure they could even make it out of the pillow fight in that universe.
All right, this is beautiful. I think we might disagree more than any year we've done this, because I don't know if I like any of those takes. I'll start with LaSalle. I like that just because they're probably my second favorite program to root for, but I don't know. I don't have as much optimism. I'll go through my bottom five, though. To kick it off at 15, we'll go from the bottom up. I have UMass. I just heavily reliant on freshmen, and their two best players are both big guys. I think you need to win with guards in the A-10, and unless Jalen Curry is borderline rookie of the year, I just don't think they're going to have the guard play to get it done. 14, I have LaSalle. I agree with you that Dunphy alone takes them out of last place, but there's just so much pressure, the weight of the world on Josias this year. And maybe you get something exciting out of Fasasi as a freshman, but LaSalle just got so much out of their rebounding last year and the physicality from the Drames. I love the backcourt, but I think they're just going to get pounded on the glass most nights. 13, GW, which I've been second-guessing this one a lot, especially after we just talked to Kai, and I do think Caputo's a really good coach. You mentioned the three reasons they're going to be better, Caputo, Bishop, and Edwards, but my reason that they're not going to be better is that they still have to fill three other spots on the court, and I'm just...
Benny Schroeder.
Yeah, he's going to be good, probably, but I mean, even then, they're still going to be playing some freshmen. Their center has hardly played in his college career. So just too many question marks for me. And the fact that, like we did mention, they weren't that good last year. They racked up wins in conference play, but their defense was a nightmare, and I don't see it getting a ton better. 12, I have Davidson. I just think that the roster is worse than last year, and they didn't do a good enough job alleviating the two weaknesses. They couldn't shoot threes, and they couldn't rebound. And I just, unless Brizzy is a superstar at point guard, I don't really know where the three-point shooting is going to come from. And then 11, I have George Mason, which I think it's kind of a mixed bag. Like, I've seen a lot of different projections for this team, and I'm kind of just splitting the difference. They could be a sneaky top half team, or they could bottom out. Just so many transfers, a first-year head coach at any level. And I think the defense, I mean, they got a lot of size from the transfer portal, so that should be good. But just not a whole lot of offense outside of Polite, not a ton of three-point shooting.
All right, so do you also have a decent drop-off between 7 and 8? Because normally I like to pull someone from the bottom half to make a big jump. I couldn't find that team this year.
Yeah, I would say that is where my cutoff is. I mean, St. Louis, I wanted to pick higher for a while, but all the eligibility concerns and injuries just have scared me away. So yeah, I'd say there's a solid top 7 and then bottom 8 this year.
All right, so the three teams that I have in my next tier are all teams that you just talked about. So I'll just give my counters in that fashion. At 10, I have Davidson. I think they're a little bit worse than last year. We're going to all just kind of forget that Foster Lawyer was not himself in conference play last season. He took a step back to end the year, and they gave us no reason to believe it last year. But I still have to give a little bit of a benefit of the doubt to the Davidson system unless it fails this year. And if they stink, I will completely wipe my memory of what the name McKillop has done for the school in the past.
Well, I'll say too, I'm not trying to, you know, say bad things about Matt McKillop, but Bob's not walking through those doors. If he was the coach, I'd probably just pick him 7th because.
Yeah, if Bob was walking through those doors, Reed Bailey would be rebounding and we'd have them like 5th.
Yeah.
But I think that they still have a really high ceiling to go with an incredibly low floor. There's so many random guys to look at. Logan, like Kai mentioned, Angelo Brizzy. They happen to have these three seniors who kind of serve the perfect roles to bring along all these young guys this year. Like, Grant Huffman is basically the best role player you can possibly have. I ended up not putting him on all conference, but I thought about it for a while. And he can handle point guard duties when Brizzy's not in the game. He's become an acceptable three-point shooter. And most importantly, he's your best defender. He's an absolute dog who's going to take so much pressure off of Brizzy and Jarvis Moss, et cetera, et cetera. David Skogman, like, all he does is just make threes and rebound, which is what you love to have with this roster of misfit big men. And then Connor Cochera, who I guess will probably go off again like he did against UMass last year, at least once or twice. Just kind of a guy who will give you a big scoring game off the bench. And you just kind of get to spend the season developing young guys around that. I think a few of them end up breaking out, and it's enough for them to at least not be terrible. At 9, I have GW. God, I cannot believe after a year that I believe in a team that's leaning this much on James Bishop. We saw how much of an abject disaster that was 2 years ago. I'm really putting my faith in Chris Caputo, the guy he turned Bishop into last year, a just slightly inefficient, not disgustingly inefficient player who is going to be able to do a lot with the ball in his hands, is going to lead to pulling him out of the pillow fight. I think that team massively outperformed their roster last year because of the coach. Now they actually like have bench players. I think at various points last year, they only had 7 scholarship guys on their roster. they actually might have some guys who can play defense. After they lost EJ Clark, they had basically none other than Ricky Lindo on the right day. And if Hunter Dean was able to just kind of camp and block shots. So I don't expect them to be a runaway worst defense in the league anymore. They'll be good on offense again. And number eight, I thought about jumping George Mason into the top half. I think Ronald Polite's a borderline top five player in this conference who took a huge, huge step up at the end of last season. Now that he's going to be the guy, his improvement's only going to continue. There's just so many random pieces I like on this team. I think Jared Billups might make all defense this season. I have Darius Maddox as one of my final all-conference players. Like I talked about in team preview, he's does a lot of Deshaun Schwartz type stuff. He's an above-average defender who rebounds well for his position and is going to be able to give you some good scoring from all over the court. I think he's a proper running mate for Polite. Keyshawn Hall might break out. He might not. And if they somehow get a waiver for Haynes, then I start to feel really good about them. The only reason I couldn't go higher is that they just don't have the big guys to compete. Amari Kelly's a good player. Pavret looks like he's going to be a good player. I don't trust either of those as my stud horse that I'm sending up against the Deron Holmeses and the Chad Vennings and the Deme Adelakuns of the world.
Yeah, just a lot of uncertainty with that team. Well, we've already talked about the three teams I'll bring up, but I have them all in a little bit more of a positive light. We'll start with Richmond at 10th. I mean, a couple things. I mean, one, they finished with a very poor record. Analytically, they weren't terrible last year. I think they were actually higher than teams like GW and KenPom.
Everyone was higher than GW and KenPom.
Yeah, but I think the guard play is going to be a lot better. Getting Jordan King and Delonte Hunt, two guys that have played a lot of college basketball games, is going to help because that was a big weakness for the Spires last year. And I think between that and Neil Quinn getting another year under his belt, not coming in as a newcomer, we're going to see some better ball movement from the Spiders. I think the three-point shooting is a pretty big concern because outside of King, as you already mentioned, there's not a ton, but still an experienced group. And like I said in our team preview, this is kind of just a Band-Aid to cover up the problems getting these transfers. The most important thing for the health of this program is to develop some of the talented freshman guards. Ninth, I'm going to take St. Louis. This was a team that most of the offseason, I just kind of told myself, yeah, they're going to end up fifth or sixth, and there's just too many problems with this team right now. I still kind of buy into what you said about Travis's teams never completely suck, but there's just... they have no size and they don't have the offensive talent to win shootouts like they have the last couple years. If they have to win games on defense, that's going to be a problem. And then number eight, I'm going to plug my nose, close my eyes, and take Rhode Island. I don't like it very much, but I'm buying into the athleticism of the transfers that Archie brought in. I already mentioned earlier, I think one of these newcomers is going to make all conference. And someone we haven't talked about, but sounds like David Fuchs could potentially be in the freshman of the year discussion. And I think with Rhode Island, maybe I'm going a little bit toward the Duquesne path. I know it's not as experienced of a team, but where you know you have a good coach, things didn't work out just with a lack of talent and chemistry the year before, you clean house and start over. And I'm just buying into the fact that I still think Archie is one of the best coaches in the league, and he can do that.
All right, let's go into our essentially double bye contenders groups. And we do have the same top seven, just in different orders. And I think now that St. Louis has kind of fallen off in some people's minds, a lot of people will have it split the same way. At seven, I'll take St. Joe's. We talked about them already. I've mentioned on two other pods, but not this one, I think putting St. Joe's at five is an absolute cop-out because it's kind of where the talent tells you they should be. I think you go all in one way or the other. You're either in or out, and you got to move them two to three spots in that direction accordingly. I got them down here. I already gave the stat about the offense. I got more. Billy Lang has had a top 189 in KenPom defense three times. The last 2 years, were two of the three best defenses he's coached in his entire college basketball career. And I almost got sucked in. Dr. John told us on the last episode, he went to practice. They were working hard. They were drilling on the defensive stuff. Man, Billy Lang coached at the Naval Academy for like a decade and then was an assistant coach on a Sixers team that was one of the great young defenses in the NBA in the 21st century. I cannot choose to believe that all of a sudden he woke up in like July and was like, hey, this is the year to start working hard on defense and practice. They're probably doing this for years. This is just not a team of defenders. And for as transcendent offensively that Greer, Reynolds, Brown, and Klacek can be together on any given night where, like you said, they could conceivably beat Kentucky in the non-con. They also might get killed by like UMass in January because shots aren't falling. I just don't believe in this defense whatsoever. Even if Asondico is elite, all it does is take minutes away from the one good defender they had last year, which was Rashear Fleming. The only way this is going to change is if they do what I said and get great contributions out of a guy like a Simmons. Or the one way that this is wrong is if Eric Reynolds just realized that he has the athleticism to be an awesome defender. And if he does, he will be in the NBA next year and spent the entire summer working on that. That's the one way that I am dead wrong here. Right above them, I have Fordham at 6. I think that their defense and Dayton's defense are the two units in this conference to just blindly trust. Fordham's going to be awesome on defense. Their offense may be outright objectively awful. They're losing the two guys that actually did something for them on that end. And even though I see Will Richardson having a huge breakout, unless Jafet Medor can step in immediately and replace what Darius Quisenberry gave them, or Josh Rivera is an all-conference guy now versus next year where I think he's going to reach it, then they're a bottom 3 to 5 offense at best. And that's just going to weigh them down, keep them out of the top four. But this is absolutely over a 500 team just because of those veterans on defense and the fact that they're going to be really tough to beat at home. Just like most of the other teams that I still have ahead of them. Bonnie's at 5. I already gave that rant. I don't need to go back into it. And then Lyle at 4. I went over that as well.
All right. Well, good. I've got some more differences. 7, I'll start with Loyola Chicago. I know you and Kai both raved about them. I think they're fine. That's it. They finished dead last with a ton of the same guys that they still have. And I think the transfers are going to be good this year, but I thought they were going to be good last year too. So they just need to prove it a little bit to me. And I still think part of it too, that would be a huge jump. Like, I feel like 15th to 7th would be looked at as a good season, but part of it I talked about during our team preview, they just have so many different options. And last year it felt like Valentine never figured out the winning formula or the right rotation. And this year's kind of the same. I mean, on paper, they've got 10, 11, 12 guys who can play. And I just don't know how it's all going to shake out. 6, I've got St. Joe's. I already went into it a little bit, how I think they have a very high ceiling and they could potentially go on a run in Brooklyn where you're scared to face the Hawks. We almost had that last year even. I mean, they played Dayton super close after winning 2 games. But yeah, it's fair to be skeptical on the defense, even with some of these freshmen that have a lot of length. Billy Lang hasn't proven it. You already gave the stats. I think Asondico is the big X factor. If he's an all-conference guy as a freshman, then that could change everything because we already know the guards are great, but the track record just doesn't encourage me. 5th, I have Duquesne. I don't love how their roster fits. I've talked about it a lot, but they have too many big men, and there's so much pressure on the 3 returning guards they do have, plus Nichols, the one freshman who's going to play in the backcourt. I think the bigs are all really good, but at a certain point, I just don't see the benefit of having so many. And just wonder if they're going to be able to shoot as many threes as they did last year. If Savrasov can play the three at a very high level, then Duquesne's going to be just fine. But I don't know. It's just going to be a lot bigger team, a lot different makeup, I think. And then four at VCU, which I don't feel great about picking them this low, especially disrespecting after what they did last year, but it's basically a new team with a new coach. And I'm scared about the depth concerns. They're already down to nine guys, as we mentioned, and we'll get Bairstow back during conference play. Maybe they'll even get Bamisil. You never know there. But I think Kai made a good point earlier that that really does lower the expectations for this team, because at one point that was an all A10 all conference player, and all of a sudden he's gone. So I think it's kind of just what we saw at St. Bonaventure last year too. When you have pretty much a complete roster turnover, I think especially early on in the season, you temper expectations a little bit. Still think the talent level of VCU can take them to a double bye, but don't see them quite at the top of the conference as they were last year.
Oh my God, you have Fordham in the top three. Thomas Aiello is going to be so happy.
I have not mentioned Fordham yet. That's correct. I might have, maybe I was the one person who gave them the first place vote. Have we ever seen that in the A10 where the seventh place team
That
had
was just
a
weird.
one in parentheses? I
I
promise it
still can't
wasn't
even
me.
figure out who all
I don't
votes
have a
on it because
vote.
it's like 30 votes. So it's the 15 coaches and then just random other people that has never been explained to me.
Yeah, it was me. I voted for Fordham.
All right, top three. I went back and forth on second and third for a while. I ended up taking VCU 2, Dayton 3. Sorry, Duquesne 3. Their rosters are really close. Like, it's kind of crazy how similar they are. Both led by a stud, most likely first team all conference guard, Shulgun Grant. Both have the proper running mate that they have great chemistry with, who's going to be on the back end of the all conference teams with Clark and Bairstow. Zeb Jackson's kind of the guard version of Trey Williams, just an unbelievable defender who can guard a whole bunch of different positions. Doesn't give you a ton offensively, but is a solid playmaker and is great around the rim and a really smart player. They both have a bunch of random questions marks at the center position, including a pair of sophomores each who played limited minutes last year but showed some flashes. VCU, a little bit more pedigree. Duquesne, a little bit more actual production there. They both have a huge question mark transfer center coming in. Mohorčić with the injuries, Wheeler with the production. Both have a little point guard who's going to need to make a big impact. Like, these teams are kind of even just all up and down the board. And in the end, oh, also coaches who have been to multiple NCAA tournaments at other schools. In the end, I give it to VCU because of the 1% scenario that still exists, which is that somewhere at the end of November, the NCAA is getting sued by like 30 schools over waivers, and they just decide to start reducing their liability. Bamisil's a Virginia kid. I think if they start giving waivers to some of the guys who it got denied for, he'd probably be one of the first. And if they get Joe Bamisil, they're at the same level, if not just simply better than Dayton. And so I think that's the tiebreaker there. Number one, I have spent 3 months now trying to figure out how to not put Dayton in the number one spot. And I just came to a simple conclusion. This team is just better than everybody else. This roster is just better. And we talk about it all the time. Anthony Grant, no matter what, there's no chance they're going to be bad. Their floor is like fourth place. But you have the best player in the conference in a runaway in Daron Holmes. I kind of shrugged off all the, oh, they were injured last year because these guys all played. They didn't miss a lot of games. And you just forget that it means something that three of their best players all got surgery within 2 weeks of the season ending last year. Smith, Bray, and Elvis were all beat up all of last season, which explains why Smith didn't make a leap and why Bray and Elvis both went backwards. This roster is way deeper. It's way more versatile. I wish they had Kamara right now. They might be a top 15 team in the country if they did. But they're good enough to be able to replace him at that spot. The overall roster is so much better. And by the way, like, this team, this is it. They're losing Holmes to the NBA at the end of the season. This team has to make the NCAA tournament.
That sounds exactly like what we said about Dayton last year. And that's why I didn't pick them first. I agree with you. They are a lock for the top four. They might even be a lock for the top three. They are going to be a good team, but I can't feel that confident saying they're going to win the league when they, the last 2 years, similar teams haven't quite gotten it done. So we'll see. The health is going to be the absolute most important thing of this team. And at least they have a little bit more insurance now, bringing in Cheeks and Bennett to the backcourt. But yeah, just losing an NBA player, Kamara, is absolutely huge. So we'll see where they go. But I'll go back to my number three pick first. The Fordham Rams, who I already talked about. Ergonomics, Rose Thrill, whatever you want to say about this team. I am buying in to the culture of this program. I think, as Dr. John said last week, they're going to have a legit home court advantage. They might even win the most games overall in the regular season just because of their soft schedule again. I mean, if they start out 11-2, 12-1, that's going to build a ton of momentum going into January. And we've already hit on it, but I do think this is the best defensive team in the conference. So if they can just get average offensive production, they're going to be a very difficult out. Number two, I have Dayton. Just like I just said, couldn't quite feel good about picking them number one. And I will say, I don't feel all that much better about picking St. Bonaventure number one. It was kind of just a process of elimination, but I think what separated it for me, I think unlike you, I am pretty high on the Bonnies backcourt. I think Banks is going to have a great season, and having the other transfers, in particular Adams Woods, is I think going to take a lot of pressure off Kyrell Luke as a ball handler. And then I think Pride is going to alleviate some of the scoring where Banks had to carry the Bonnies too many nights last year. The front court has a little bit more question marks outside of Venning. It's not super deep. I know we talked about in the last episode, guys like Noel Brown, Melian Martinez, maybe they provide a little bit more rim protection, because that is an area where the Bonnies struggled a lot last year. I think having Oshunayi covered up some of the weaknesses they had on defense, where he just cleaned up all of the messes, and they didn't have that same level of interior defense last year. But overall, just think the Bonnies bringing back every productive player from last year, and I really have bought into the two transfers they have. I'm just, at the end of the day, going with the team that hasn't been there, and Dayton has already gone through the heartbreak of falling just short, and we know they're going to be right there again. They're going to be a top four team, but in a year with a lot of uncertainty, I just feel more comfortable going with a little bit more of the unknown and the team that hasn't quite been there yet.
All right. All I will say is, no one send the receipts for this back at me if either VCU or LaSalle really struggles in the non-con. Because VCU, those young guys are going to get better as the year goes on. They're going to get Bairstow back. And LaSalle, let's be honest, might be the worst team in the non-con. And then the Fran factor will kick in come January, and they'll start winning some games that we think that they shouldn't.
Yeah, LaSalle, they're not going to give up. Some teams are, there's always a few teams that give up every year, and LaSalle won't be one of them. That's another factor, I think, elevating them from the bottom couple teams.
All right, we'll close this thing out. I think we both have six over-under picks. Are we picking our own, or are we just giving it to the other guy and they're picking it?
We can just go kind of rapid fire and give a few thoughts. I can pick my own if you want to. Or it doesn't matter.
I think we can just pick each other's. All right, I'll let you start off here.
All right, last year the answer to this was 2, but I'm going to say over-under 3.5 postseason teams for the A-10. So that's NCAA, NIT, CBI, and the Vegas 16, if that makes a comeback combined.
Would you say 3.5?
Yep.
Well, I'm glad that the one I had to scrap was over under 2.5 NIT teams, which could mean it's either a really good or really bad year, depending on how you want to take it. I'll take the over. I think this conference can't get one bit again. Like, Jesus, they might have to fold if they do. So, two in the NCAA tournament. They, unless it's the true hell year, the third place team is always good enough to make the NIT. So, I'll go ahead, even with the changes, the fact that basically like two or three NIT slots are now going to go to crappy power conference teams that have no business being in there. I think that the A10 ends up with probably five to six teams in the top 100 KenPom this year. And so that's good enough to get the fourth team into the NIT. Over.
All right.
All right. My first one, over under 4.5 times. And I might have to amend this after my little Denzel Valentine thing earlier.
Over.
4.5 times that I refer to Sean Bairstow as his brother Cameron, who played at New Mexico and then for the Chicago Bulls. I have already done it once in the VCU preview.
Yeah, it's over. I'm just going to say it's a good thing Jaden or Jalen, whichever one, DeLoach is not in the conference anymore because Bairstow's replacing him now.
The one thing that is going to help is that we probably won't be talking about Bairstow till like mid-December.
That's true. But we're going to be talking a lot about, oh, he's coming back in a couple weeks. His name's still going to make some appearances. So I will take the over. All right. I think we would both agree this might be the most important stretch of the season for any team in the conference. Over under 2.5 wins for Dayton in their first 5 games. So that is SIU Edwardsville at Northwestern and then 3 games at the Charleston Classic.
Sorry, would you put the line at 2.5?
Over under 2.5 wins.
Over. And I say it with blind optimism because if it's under, just
Oh.
kill the at large chances right then and there.
Well,
They have to play
yeah.
well through this stretch. I think that the road game curse is dead. And it's gonna actually really help them. If you go ahead and take a look at the secondary ticket market for Dayton Northwestern, it is very clear that there's going to be an absurd amount of Dayton fans in that building. And so that should actually help to offset the road piece a little bit for them. I think they're going to beat LSU in that opening game. It's a good matchup for them. And then, yeah, at that point, it already gets them over. And grabbing one more victory down in Charleston is gravy.
Yeah, I mean, I think based on how the last 2 years have gone, that's just killed Dayton getting off to a slow start. So that's going to be key. They have their hardest games right at the beginning of the season, and a fast start would do wonders for setting the tone and starting to build a resume.
All right. My next one is also Dayton related. We'll keep it there. Over under 11.9 combined rebounds a game from the trio of Nate Santos, Petros Padegemas, and Isaac Jack. And for perspective, the two big men on their way out, Temani Kamara and Mustafa Amziel, beat that number by 1.5 combined last year.
I think I'm gonna say under, slight under. I just don't know how much Isaac Jack's gonna play. I think I've liked what I've seen so far, but unless Dayton plays him and Holmes together, which I don't expect, then I don't see him getting a lot. I think Santos and Padegemas probably combined for 7 or 8. I would say is fair, but I'm just not convinced either one of them. I mean, whether Dayton decides to go smaller and play Jayon Simon more, or if Zimi Wilkeji gets a chance, I just don't feel confident that's going to be the big man rotation just yet. So I'll say a slight under.
They might be in trouble if it's under because the perimeter guys should rebound better than last year, which will make up for some of their troubles last season, but they're going to have to come close to matching what they lost with Kamara and Amziel.
I will say though, didn't pulling it up right now. Enoch Cheeks averaged 4.5 last year. I could see
Oh,
him
yeah,
getting
they're going to be a lot better rebounding on the
some.
perimeter.
Yeah, I mean he'll help with that, but okay, I'll say slight under. I think this is very important as to whether this team is good or not, or a contender or not. Over under 1.5 all conference players for VCU. I think we both agree Max Scholga is a safe pick, but who else is going to be there for VCU?
Over. I still put Bairstow there if he gets healthy in time. And I had a brief moment where I legitimately tried to figure out if Zeb Jackson could be.
Wait, Bairstow, who's that again? What's his first name?
Mike, Sean, Steve, something like that.
Okay, that's we're still under then. Very good.
All right, next one. I'll go with an ex-VCU player. Over under 34.9% from three for Trey Clark.
What did he shoot last year? Do you have that handy?
I did and accidentally closed the tab, but it's slightly lower than that.
I got it.
He was so bad the first month of the season.
He shot 34.2%.
Yeah, and that was with like a 1-for-23 start or something.
I'm going to say under just because I kind of think he's going to have to take more threes than he did last year. Just with like what I already talked about, I think Duquesne's going to have to – they're going to play bigger, and if he's going to be one of the key perimeter players, probably getting some more minutes. Yeah, I just think with the higher usage, a little bit under, but that's going to be important to the Duke success. They're going to need – we already know Day-Day Grant's going to be a great shooter, but Rozier and Clark are going to have to produce from out there. All right, next pick for me. How about – I'll give you – well, my over-under is what his stat was last year. Over under 21.6 points per game for James Bishop. So basically, does he score more than last year or less?
Under, just because if he still keeps playing like a point guard, I don't see how he takes the extra shots necessary to really bump that up much higher.
I'd actually pose this. This was almost a hot take. I feel like GW is going to be better the fewer points Bishop scores. Like if he only scores 16 or 17... that probably means he's getting six assists and making his teammates better. If he's scoring like 22, 23, I think that means everyone else just stinks on the team. So
that's why I called him somewhat inefficient still.
Yeah, at times.
All right, over under. When we do the power hot take segment in January, is it over under 9.5 in the name?
Oh my God, that was – so I had the same question. So today it's a power 11 over-unders because I said over-under 9.5 for the conference ranking this year. I'm going to say – so the American outside of FAU and Memphis, I don't think it's very good.
And the bottom of the American's always worse than the bottom of the A-10, just nobody realizes it.
And Conference USA, the top teams all went to the American. So I feel very good saying it's going to be a power 10 year. I'm going to say we're going to be the 10th best conference. So power 10 hot takes. But yeah, I had the same question, I guess. So what's your thought?
Probably the same. Cause I'm not sure who else they jump.
You're not jumping. The
WCC is going to be good this year. Cause St. Mary's going to be awesome.
And
like just San Francisco is flat out awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't think the Americans, the conference they could pass because I'm sure the Mountain West, that's got to be stronger again this year.
All right, so I guess I'll go with one more here then. Over under 6.5 Bonaventure players play at least 15 minutes a game in conference play.
I'll say over. I bet they get 7. Like I would say... the 5 returning stars from last year and the 2 transfers. That gets you to 7.
See, I can see the universe where Kyrell Luke's just out of the rotation, and then everyone talks about Noel Brown. He's going to play like 8 minutes a game. But I'll give you a stat of the day in the form of a trivia question. Who was the last St. Bonaventure 7th man to hit that mark?
Hit 15 minutes a game?
Yes, in conference play.
So I guess no one did it last year or the year before or the year before that. I'm going to say Boca Bobby.
Boca Bobby! And the reminder, no matter how good Mark Schmidt's bench is, he only plays it if he doesn't trust his starters. And Boca Bobby was in there because he never trusted Justin Winston.
That is insane. I promise I did not pull up anything. I couldn't have that fast. All right. I'm trying to, to be honest, I don't know Boca Bobby's last name. I just know.
We made it.
Oh boy, that is a good poll. All right, my last over-under. Which I think this is another important one to determine the direction of this team. Over under 34% from three for Davidson. Last year they were about 32%. 34 was about average in the conference. I'd say they have to hit that mark to have a chance at being good.
I'll take the slight over. I think they have enough theoretical shooters for them, for a few of them to become real shooters.
Yeah, it's hard to see them being as bad. And you already talked about Lawyer being hurt last year. He had to take more shots than they would have wanted. So maybe it won't be as high of a volume, but they can get some better shots with the other guys having more experience now.
All right, my last one is a before or after. And I'll give you a moment to pull up the St. Louis Billikens schedule while I speak here.
Right.
Before or after December 10th, that at least one prominent St. Louis fan Twitter account, looking at you guys, Midtown Madness, puts hashtag fire Travis Ford as part of their Twitter name.
They're going to win the first two games, Southern Indiana and Lincoln, whoever that is. Illinois State, a conference game, Missouri Valley matchup, so that'll be interesting. You know what? St. Louis is a really soft schedule to start. Their first really tough game is Utah State at home. I think I actually could see them having an okay non-conference, but toward the end, I mean, their last game is at NC State, and then they start with Loyola at Mason, Joe's, Dayton, VCU. That's a tough start to the A-10 schedule. So I'll say not until after, when they're 1-4 in the A-10, we get some complaints.
December 9th, home for Hofstra. It's a day to watch for the disgruntled fans to start coming out of the woodwork if they lose.
Oh, yeah. All right, so we ended up with a Power 11 hot takes. Or over-unders by accident, because we had the same one. But I think that was good. Those were thought-provoking.
Yeah, one of my favorite segments of the year, every year. So this is it, Matt. Any other preseason feelings you wanna get out here before the year starts?
Let's see. I already gave my thought on jersey numbers above 5. That was the big one. Yeah, I just think the A-10 is going to be better. I don't think it's going to be great, but there's nowhere to go but up. I think the fact that most of the coaches are back and there's not as much turnover this year is going to be important. So we'll see where it goes. I think there's a lot of teams that could potentially be good. I don't know how high the ceilings are for anybody, but we've seen it so many years where Davidson came from being picked 6th, I think, to win the league. Or I mean, VCU last year wasn't really thought of as a true contender. So even though we had some different rankings ourselves, doesn't mean there aren't a lot of teams that could get it done this year.
I got two thoughts. Number one, those first few days in Chicago for this league are going to be monumental. Either Loyola has to beat FAU or Dayton has to beat Northwestern, because year after year, we walk out of week one just feeling bummed out because no one took advantage of a chance to get a good win. Those are two chances to get great wins from a pair of teams that I have in the top four in the conference. They're both going to be underdogs. I think you got to take one of them, and then we can start to have some actual belief going into the tournament season. And my other take, Will Richardson was my breakout guy through and through all summer. I started to waver a little bit. Seemed like nobody was on board with me. And then Kai mentioned it earlier. The coaches picked him as the breakout star in the Almanac. And it reaffirmed everything I had believed. Will Richardson, second team All-Conference, book it now.
I like that. You know what? I will say this too, because last year, and this is one final victory lap that I'll never bring it up again. I picked VCU to win last year. No one else did that. But I felt weirdly confident about that. And that the same reason or the same feeling now, I just feel confident Fordham's going to be a top three team. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm just not as excited about some of the other perceived contenders, but I'm fired up about this team. And I can't wait to see the environment at Rose Hill.
One more victory lap since we're talking about it. We snuffed out the Loyola thing last year.
I think I picked them still like six. We didn't pick them.
I had them eight.
Yeah, I mean,
no one in their right mind could have possibly thought they were going to finish dead last. But
no.
Just so everyone knows, this is a different piece of Loyola, of the Loyola hype train that we're getting on, because we both have them ahead of where the preseason poll picked them. So
that's true.
All right, that does it. That's the preseason. If it's opening day and you're still super excited about the year and you need some pods to fill your time, go back and listen to any of our off-season pods before they expire. Team previews, Hoops Weiss, Ronald Polite, John Rothstein. If it's any point in like the first 3 weeks of the season that you're listening to this, go back and listen to Dr. John Giannini. Plenty of good nuggets of information on that are going to be important for a while into this season. And thank you all for listening to us all off season long. I doubt we'll be back right at the beginning of week two, probably a later in the week episode there, if not the beginning of Thanksgiving week. But then after that, it's going to be basically once a week through the non-con before we really rev it up in conference season. So be sure to keep tuning in. Keep giving us some good feedback on iTunes. We appreciate all your 5-star ratings. Reach out to us on Twitter at @3BidLeaguePod. And let's hope that the epitome of brutalities get kept to a minimum here these first few days.